There's a lot of other elements that go into segmenting to be able to properly serve clients.
How flexible are they to virtual versus in person?
When asked for the key to her success, she said, "I'm just really, really diligent about tracking where my clients' money is." Welcome to the Bright House Financial Insights Panel podcast. In these monthly conversations, leading experts share actionable tips and strategies to help financial professionals like you build strong businesses and lasting relationships with clients. Hello, I'm your host, Stephen Boswell, president of the Oxley Institute, a leading provider of marketing solutions for financial professionals. Over the next several months, we'll be discussing key strategies for retaining and expanding relationships with your existing clients. Our panel of experts will talk about segmentation and communication strategies, building unique client experiences, and using the digital tools you've relied on during the pandemic to boost your efficiency as in-person meetings return. Today's focus is on using a segmentation strategy to build trust with different types of clients in a way that will eventually help you grow your share of wallet with them. Joining me today are communications expert Erica Dewan, author of Digital Body Language, How to Build Trust and Connection No Matter the Distance, and prospecting and marketing expert Mary Beth Kuzmeski, the founder of Red Zone Marketing. Welcome, Erica and Mary Beth. I'm excited about today's topic. So often when we talk about growth, we talk about it from an external perspective, how to network, how to build strategic partnerships, and so on. And today comes from a different angle, working to serve current clients more deeply. Mary Beth, I'd love to get started with you on this one. When we think client service, one of the first concepts that comes to mind is client segmentation. And as you think about the many financial professionals that you've helped over the years, what would you consider best practices for segmenting clients?
Well, I think with segmenting clients, what most financial professionals do is they take a look at revenue and they take a look at assets under management, and they segment their client base based on those two elements. And the reality is that there's a lot of other elements that go into segmenting to be able to properly serve clients. For instance, maybe there is someone who's a potential great advocate for you, or maybe someone is in a career path that they're going to have an enormous amount of money when they retire or when they sell their business. And it's taking a look at how are we looking at not only today's revenue and assets, but taking a look at what's going to happen tomorrow to really put together a service model that works for your clients.
I'm curious, Mary Beth, on this. What's the argument for having service models to begin with? Why wouldn't you treat everybody exactly the same?
Well, if everyone in your client base is exactly the same, then you could do that. If everyone is 65 years old, just retired, has the same risk tolerance, then it's a perfect solution. But the reality is you've got some clients who are younger, who are really busy executives, and you've got clients who are retired and are trying to fund their grandkids' college education. So you've got all sorts of different people that need different service. We should serve them the way that they best need it. And in order to figure that out, you've got to do a segmentation strategy to figure out who needs more communication, who needs more handholding, who is going to have issues when the market goes down for a day, where do we need to be in terms of service so that all of our clients are happy where they're at.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting, both from the service perspective and the marketing perspective, that from a marketing lens, you would say that segmentation helps determine how much contact you give each tier. Erica, I'd love to get your take on this as well, specifically with regards to communication styles playing a role in how you segment clients. How would you recommend people use that?
I found that clients often span two different styles. One style are digital natives. These are clients who really like quick bites of information, such as on social media, blog posts, short YouTube videos, or even quick text or chat messages that allow them to understand information and make quick decisions. The other end of the spectrum are those that I call digital adapters. Digital adapters are those that really prefer those face-to-face meetings, those in-depth video meetings, perhaps personalized newsletters that are longer quality content versus quick messages. Understanding the digital preferences of your client, as well as how they like to process information, will not only allow you to stand out as a financial professional, but allow you to stay relevant in these changing times.
So, Erica, if I'm looking to segment my clients by digital natives and digital adapters, how would I do that? Are there certain questions I can ask to identify which client is which?
There are three questions that are incredibly important to ask as you segment your clients. The first is, what tools do your clients prefer to use? Do they engage most via email, phone, text, video calls, or live meetings? The second question is, what is their tech savviness and literacy? Do they engage in complex information best in person using physical body language, or do they like to read that thoughtful presentation in advance of the meeting and then have a deep dive discussion during the meeting? And last but not least, how flexible are they to virtual versus in person? Are they big fans of meeting virtually, potentially allowing you to meet with them more often than you would in person and engaging with them in ways that will allow you to build new client bases in different locations outside of your home region?
This is all really great information to have. So your clients' behaviors and preferences are critical to knowing how to segment them. Mary Beth, I wonder, are there other personality traits or characteristics that financial professionals should consider? How do they identify these in their clients?
Well, I have seen several financial professionals actually use tools like Kolbea, K-O-L-B-E-A, and also use Myers-Briggs with their clients. Maybe someone is really wants to go in depth on particular topics. These sorts of personality assessments, if you will, can help guide how you'll communicate with your clients moving forward based on their preferences and what they like. And so we've seen that to be really successful in taking it to another level. We call it micro segmenting.
But sometimes if you're a financial professional wanting to simplify it a little bit with existing clients or new potential clients, there are little clues that you may get from them. How do they interact with you by email? How do they interact with you by phone? What does their voicemail message say? Is it, hey, this is Steven, call me back, that kind of personality? Or is it, today is Friday, June 13th, 8 a.m., I'm in the office? Like, that may dictate how we communicate with them.
I know a financial professional who was a digital adapter who loved to call potential clients to build and identify prospects out of the blue. He called many clients out of the blue and found that some of them just never responded. What he actually discovered is those clients were digital natives. And he ended up switching his approach, sending a thoughtful email with an availability link to sign up to join a call on his calendar. The least human interaction, completely by email, to set up that call was actually much better than a phone call out of the blue.
So I might be a phone guy, but if you're an email person, then we're not connecting. I need to modify my style as the financial professional to make this work.
That brings me to actually thinking about something that happened during the process of having to go virtual for a lot of financial professionals. And this one financial professional held long review meetings with his clients. And some of his clients, he would know, did not want to come in for these meetings. But what he realized was, and he moved into a client service model after COVID happened and after they had to go virtual and all of that, because his long meetings turned short and his clients who didn't want meetings very often wanted more meetings. So a lot of his clients are executives. They're super busy. They don't have time for an hour and a half meeting and to drive to get there. And so it has been actually an eye opener in terms of what it's allowed him to do and how closely in contact he's able to be with his current clients who didn't want to come in and meet with him for an hour and a half to go through the details of the alpha and the beta in the accounts. And so now he's realized, wait a minute, this is actually having an effect because he's in contact with clients more, recommend different strategies and solutions for them that he wasn't able to do if they didn't want to come in and meet with him.
I think those are great points, Mary Beth. And in many ways, virtual is enhancing the sales process as well. Instead of having a fancy dinner with potential prospects, hosting a virtual meeting is quite easy and can happen anytime. We don't have to invest in a hotel ballroom or wait 6 months to plan a dinner. We can schedule regular, even monthly webinars that bring prospects and clients together to have meaningful conversations and consistently engage them no matter the distance.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting time for so many financial professionals to rethink their service models, not only because of the COVID period we went through, but because people have shown a preference for more virtual communication. I've appreciated this conversation because we're looking at it from the angle of personality type and preferences for different types of communication, as opposed to simply the rank order of assets or revenue that we've typically used to determine how frequently we interact with them. So traditionally, it would be let's rank them by assets or revenue, let's then provide them a depth of service based on where they rank in that service model. And I think there's more possible, which we're tapping into right now. Once you've segmented your clients, one of the things you might better understand is which clients thrive when they make deeper connections with other people, even other clients. Once financial professionals know that, how can they better connect their clients to each other, and how does that create additional loyalty?
One of the biggest opportunities that financial professionals can use to stand out in the marketplace is by not only being a provider for their clients, but also a network creator for their clients. Thinking about unique ways to host webinars where clients can come together to have meaningful conversations about significant life events or changes in the marketplace. Another example is using newsletters or blogs to have digital conversations with your clients around issues that they're facing. And last but not least, don't hesitate to ask your clients what might be a problem that they are facing that may be outside your expertise, and how might you be able to introduce them to someone in your network? Remembering that being a connector is actually one of the most beneficial things you can do to create lasting loyalty with your clients.
Yeah, it's so interesting that the more you can help clients connect with one another, the more they are connected to you and your brand. And I think we've all experienced that at some point in the past, whether it is with your children's school or a fitness facility that you frequent. When you're building bonds with other people who use that same provider, you end up with a better bond with the provider themselves. Mary Beth, what other strategies do you recommend outside of client events for building loyalty?
Well, building loyalty is something that goes beyond those experiences, and it really goes to being proactive with the client service that you're delivering. That is the one main thing. If you're proactive with your service, with your look at how their accounts are going and how they're doing as it relates to their goals and, you know, the progress to their goals, those are the things that are really critical that build that loyalty. But the only way we can be proactive is to be on top of all of the details and being able to anticipate what may happen with a client or what may be going to happen with the client. And proactive is something where the clients say, wow, I can't believe you're reaching out. Like they're surprised that they're reaching out because, hey, here's a solution that I just thought about for you. You probably should talk to your estate planning attorney or something like that. And it is really, really impactful because it shows that they care. And that's where the loyalty comes from. That's where the trust comes from. But it requires to be able to do the things that we've been talking about, the segmentation and the service model. How do we want to serve these people and what's possible?
So we're talking about some of the activities here, things that we can do with clients to endear them to our practice, to keep them with us, to have them refer us to their friends. But I think there's another element of this as well is let's make sure we maximize the wallet share. I mean, it's better for the client that we take a more holistic look, and it's certainly better for us as well. Erica, let's move on to some sales skills around upgrading clients. We hear a lot of great language for prospecting new clients. What about financial professionals looking to upgrade existing clients? Do you have any insights on how to approach those conversations?
When it comes to upgrading clients, we have to think less like service providers and more like thought leaders. Think about the life events that your clients will be encountering in the next 5 to 7 years. One of the opportunities you have is to share knowledge with them before they need it, whether it's through blogs, newsletters, or simple thoughtful questions such as, what does success look like in the next 5 years for you? What are some of the things you hope to achieve in the next 5 to 10 years? These simple questions can shift conversation simply from what they need now to what they might need in the future.
So when we think about upgrading clients, so often it is, well, we need to consolidate accounts. But there is more to it than that. Sometimes it is offering additional services to that client. Sometimes it's small amounts of money they may have held elsewhere. I know one financial professional, very, very successful, and when asked for the key to her success, she said, I'm just really, really diligent about tracking where my client's money is. Even if it's a $5,000 CD, she wanted to know when it was set to mature, and she would then, or somebody on her team, would call that client to make the upgrade happen. Over time, it tends to add up. I know we could continue this conversation for hours, but that's all the time we have for today. Thanks once again to Erica and Mary Beth for participating. Stay tuned, everyone, for our next podcast focused on identifying clients and prospects who may be open to a fully virtual relationship. You can find more episodes of the Bright House Financial Insights Panel podcast on brighthousefinancialpro.com/insightspanel or subscribe for free through any podcast app to receive new episodes direct to your mobile device. Stay ahead of the curve with the Insights Panel from Bright House Financial. This information is brought to you courtesy of Bright House Financial Incorporated, which provides, through its affiliates, annuities and life insurance products issued by Bright House Life Insurance Company, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28277, and in New York only by Bright House Life Insurance Company of New York, New York, New York, 10017. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers, and the information presented is for educational purposes only. Speakers are compensated for their participation as subject matter experts. For financial professional use only, not for public distribution. Bright House Financial Incorporated is not affiliated with nor endorses any businesses or organizations that appear in this material.